there are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This Tuesday, May 7th, NBA Betting Picks edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100x in NBA, MLB, MMA, NHL, golf, and more. Sign up today at UnderdogFantasy.com using promo code NBASGPN to get a 100% deposit match. Welcome everyone to the NBA Gambling Podcast, part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. It is Tuesday, May the 7th, currently 11:06 on the East Coast. Here to get into the Tuesday night betting card in the NBA. We're going to preview the two series that are tipping off here on Tuesday night between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics, along with the Western Conference semifinals, the second one, between the Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And we'll also do the game one picks for tonight here as well. But joining me here to help me break everything down, you guys know my voice of the Tennis Gambling Podcast, the MLB Gambling Podcast, WNBA Gambling Podcast, and of course here on the NBA Gambling Podcast, it's Scott Studio Rochelle. Scott, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
They're doing pretty well. We were treated to two completely different type of NBA games yesterday.
Yes.
You had one high scoring close game and one low scoring blowout. So yeah, we could dive into each of those games in a bit, but overall, I had one play last night, or I had two actually. I had Josh Hart rebounds that got there. Standard. He just is phenomenal on the boards. I had Anthony Edwards on 3.5 turnovers, which I'm pretty salty about losing, which was, in my opinion, a good read. Unfortunately, he had 3 turnovers in the second half. Had a really dumb turnover with 5 minutes to go, up 20, like up 25, and that's how I lost. But yeah, kind of annoying there. Overall, though, Minnesota just destroyed Denver. We'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, you have any overall takeaways or thoughts from the games yesterday?
Yeah, not a good day for me as far as betting picks went for the show that I gave out. Did have Denver in the first quarter, a minus a 2. That was fried within about 5 minutes into the game. And I took Hartenstein rebounds to get over 9.5 and laddered that up. That didn't get anywhere close either. So not a good start to the week for me, at least as far as the picks that I gave out. Did lean to the over in the – or I did like the over – in the Pacers and Knicks game. That one got there rather easily, especially with the second half scoring, barn burner that we did see there. But let's just go in chronological order. Knicks and Pacers. Knicks do get the job done. I think let's just fast forward, I think, to the fourth quarter in those final couple of minutes where I think the Knicks were definitely fortunate on some missed calls by the referees there. I think the first one was the non-kickball that was called because it really was deflected off of Aaron Nesmith's hand, and they called it a kickball. Unfortunately, You're not able to review that. The Knicks, I think, on that same possession, I want to say, ended up hitting the DiVincenzo three. And then the offensive foul call on Miles Turner on the screen. And they did review that, and they said the call stands because he didn't, didn't give the defender, or it wasn't stationary. It wasn't set when he set that pick. Maybe a little bit of an embellishment and a great sell job by Dante DiVincenzo on that play. The one play that did annoy me, Scott, was the Jalen Brunson where he got trapped in the corner, and the ball went out of bounds off of, I think it was Nimhard's foot, and neither the refs on the near side could make the call. And here comes Tyler Ford, that's all the way on the opposite side of the court, comes in and says, oh, that went off of Jalen Brunson's, it's Pacers, Pacers basketball. And at that point, the Knicks had to use their final, or they use their challenge there at that point. If you're not able to see from your point where Tyler Ford was standing, that's why you have video replay, that you can go and review that play if you don't know where it went off of, because two of the referees that were on the near side didn't know. And that's at the point they would go and review it and say, all right, yeah, this was off his foot, it's Knicks ball. But it cost the Knicks using a timeout and also using their challenge at that point. So the officiating was absolutely brutal down the stretch. I think the Pacers did get hosed a little bit. I think they could have won that game, but a couple of questionable calls there that didn't go in their favor. The Knicks propelled themselves to the victory in game one.
Yeah, I had the Knicks alive at plus 112, so I was fine with how the game unfolded in the end. But in reality, Indiana probably got hosed. The Neesmith one was abysmal when it comes to the kickball. That wasn't even close to a kickball. That's atrocious. And you could argue that Indiana might have gotten a layup the other way. Probably not. But the point is they would have had some numbers to go with the other way. The moving screen's tricky. It wasn't as obvious as the UConn-Iowa one from women's basketball in the semis, I believe, of the tournament, where that was also called in the final 10 seconds or so. I thought you could make an argument that Turner was moving. It was pretty borderline, to be honest. The UConn one I thought was obvious, but yeah, it's tough to make a call in that spot. Dante had a flop, but the NBA rewards flopping. So I'm not shocked that DiVincenzo did it. I'm not shocked that it worked. And we got a flopping issue in the NBA, but you keep rewarding players for flopping, they're going to keep doing it. So, yeah, nice comeback win by the Knicks. I thought really the story of the game for Indiana was that Haliburton was terrible. He was just a complete non-factor the entire game. I believe he had 6 points on 6 shots. And, yeah, people think that Haliburton still might be injured. I'm not sure if it's a matter of injury or the fact that he just doesn't actually get to the foul line, or the fact that he just doesn't actually look to attack the basket ever, and he's only trying to shoot threes. But Haliburton was brutal, and you make an argument Indiana would have been better yesterday if they just used T.J. McConnell instead. In crunch time, McConnell was great for Indiana in that game. But Haliburton had 6 points, 8 assists, and 4 steals. 4 steals is pretty good, but 2 of 6 from the floor, 2 of 5 from three. He was just brutal last night. And defensively, he pisses me off because he's 6'5", and he's a traffic cone. It's really just annoying. He's so afraid of contact that he will automatically try to move out of the way on drives by the other team because he's afraid of getting a foul called on himself. And at some point, you got to realize, I'm 6'5". Like, you have to at least try to stop guys from getting to the rim. Josh Hart had a bunch of uncontested drives last night, but one play which I thought was kind of embarrassing was that one Anunoby steal. And that resulted in an Anunoby dunk. And you're looking at Haliburton, who I know is not exactly in a great position to stop Anunoby per se. He just moves out of the way.
Yeah,
I think you were in the fourth quarter in the middle of that, and it's a one-possession game. And he's going for a layup or a dunk, and Halliburton's in the right position. And he slowly drifts behind the basket because he doesn't want to actually contest anything at the rim. Like, Halliburton's defense, it's one thing if you're going to be that bad offensively, which, you know, maybe you could argue is a fluke and he'll have better games. He's a terrible defensive player, and it's embarrassing because he's 6'5". I understand Trae Young isn't a good defensive player at all, and I understand that some of that's based on mentality. He's also like 6. He's 6'1", 6'2". Like, I understand that Trae's not going to be able to stop many guys in general based on stature. At 6'5", at least show some pride. can you at least try to guard somebody? Because if you're going to be that bad on one side of the floor, you can't be that bad on the other side of the floor. And Haliburton was. So that's why I'm calling out Haliburton in particular, because in addition to being a really bad offensive player last night, he did nothing defensively the entire game besides getting some steals. But yeah, Indiana had a shot to win it. I understand you don't want to bench Haliburton because Haliburton was your best player for most of the season. If there was one time to bench Haliburton, it should have been last night because McConnell was a better player for the entire game. But at the end of the day, the Knicks showed a lot of mental toughness like they have all season. A lot of offensive rebounds, which was the story again. Josh Hart and company had a lot of rebounds on some big spots, in some big spots, and the Knicks won. So a good one for the Knicks. Brunson at 40 again. What else is new? Josh Hart was great. And yeah, Knicks are up 1-0. Indiana could have won the game. But at the end of the day, they didn't get enough rebounds down the stretch, and Haliburton was terrible. So that's kind of my main takeaway. I know referees didn't do them any favors in the game yesterday down the stretch, but you could argue that that game shouldn't have been that close down the stretch because Indiana was up by a decent amount to start the quarter. Yeah. You know, Miles Turner hits that three-pointer to get into the fourth quarter, and Indiana looks like they're kind of cruising, and then they just kept fouling. And that's an issue that Indiana's had all year long. They foul all the time. They never get to the free throw line. I believe they have the worst free throw differential in the entire league. And that kind of came back to bite them yesterday, especially in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I think that, like you mentioned, that opportunities were really there for the Pacers to really close this out. Even prior to the final couple of minutes, there were the whistles were in favor of the New York Knicks. If I told you last night Josh Hart had 24 points, you probably would have thought that he had at least 3 to 5 3-pointers. But he was only 1 of 1 from the beyond the arc, and he got relatively easily to the basket in game one. I'm trying to find the numbers for the paint numbers. I feel like they were pretty even.
I'm assuming they were. Siakam was pretty solid down the stretch in the paint.
Yeah, 64 for the Pacers and 58 for the Knicks. So plus 6 in favor of the Indiana Pacers. Yeah, I think for the Pacers, they just got to continue playing the way that they've been playing all season, and that's playing with a lot of pace. And I think that if they slow this game down, that's only going to be in favor of the New York Knicks. So, game one in the books there. Knicks get the W, 121-117. They take a 1-0 lead, and we'll have game two on Wednesday night in Madison Square Garden between these two teams. Scott, before we get over to the game between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets, let me tell everyone about the MLB season and the MLB Gambling Podcast. Hey, look, NHL playoffs are winding down. So are the NBA playoffs as we're on to round two. And that's why you guys need to come join us over on the MLB Gambling Podcast, because if you're a hardcore baseball fan or just a degenerate sitting in your office looking for some afternoon action, either way, you want to make sure you subscribe to the MLB Gambling Podcast wherever you do get your podcasts. So again, come join us on the MLB Gambling Podcast. All right, and before we do get over to the second game of the night, let me tell everyone about our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. The NBA playoffs are here, and our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, wants to make it a lot more interesting. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest play to play fantasy sports. Playing their pick'em game is as simple as selecting higher or lower on player stats, points, rebounds, assists, and so much more. Make entries of all basketball or mix and match across your other favorite sports, and you can win up to 100 times your money, and it's a ton of fun. Underdog is available in 30-plus states, including California, Texas, and even Canada. New customers can get a pick'em special in the lobby when they do sign up. Underdog will be also running different promos, cash, bonus cash airdrops, specials, giveaways, and more throughout the NBA playoffs. So make sure to follow at Underdog Picks on Twitter to keep an eye out. And like I mentioned, Underdog is available in 30-plus states, including California, Texas, and Canada. They also just launched Champions, their player-versus-player format in Florida. So make sure you guys sign up with code NBASGPN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you guys use that promo code NBASGPN. All right, Scott, game two last night between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. The Timberwolves take a commanding 2-0 lead as they head back to Minnesota for games 3 and 4 last night. I believe it's on Thursday and Friday.
I think it's Friday.
I'll check that. But nonetheless, a Yeah, Friday. Okay. A 26-point victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves. They limit the Denver Nuggets offense to 80 points last night. And mind you, that is also without Rudy Gobert, who did miss the game with the birth of his son. But no Rudy, no problem, especially on the defensive side. And I think for the Denver Nuggets, I don't want to say they didn't see this coming, but I think Minnesota has put themselves on the map here. You know, I think for going back to round one, we talked about how Phoenix Suns don't have that depth around Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker. And especially when Grayson Allen missed a lot of games, that, hey, that Minnesota was maybe the more complete team. But now you go up against the defending NBA champions in their building for game one and two and make it look like easy work. And when we previewed the series yesterday with myself and Terrell, and I said that the one guy that needed to step up for Minnesota was going to have to be Karl Anthony Towns. In the first two games, he has stepped up for this team. He looked last night. Anthony Edwards did his thing again, 11 of 17 from the floor, 27 points. Karl Anthony Towns last night, 27 points, 12 rebounds. But I think the more bigger conversation is on the defensive side, Scott, because you take a look, and this is just absolutely incredible. Every single starter last night had at least one steal. Four of the five starters had at least two steals. The Minnesota Timberwolves last night combined for 11 steals as a team and 12 blocks as a team. And that just kind of tells you how great this team is defensively. And they just had they just clamped down on this Denver Nuggets team. So the Denver Nuggets now are in trouble. Have to go on the road, now have the monumental task of having to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves teams four out of the next five games if they want to advance to the Western Conference Finals. But Minnesota commanding 2-0 lead here, Scott.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend much time on this game. Denver got their ass kicked. I feel like that kind of sums it up. The game was over in the first half, and then the Timberwolves kind of kept it rolling there. So nothing really else to add. People I saw on Twitter were critical of Joker's defense. I'm not going to even go there. They scored 80 points. I'm not going to go ahead and tell you that Denver lost this game because of bad defense. They couldn't score. Murray was terrible last night. I think he was 3-for-18. He also threw a heating pad on the court. On a side note, a little segue, I think Reggie Miller was just moronic last night. I don't know how you did not give a tech to Malone, who runs across the court to yell at the official in his face, like a manager yelling at an umpire, and then nothing happens with the tech. And then Murray chucks a heating pad on the court during live action, and Reggie Miller's praising the officials for not giving him a technical foul. What the hell are you talking about? It's during live action. What are you talking about? He threw something on the court. That's clearly a technical foul. That's a separate note. I thought Reggie Miller was terrible last night too, but Denver got their asses kicked. There's really nothing else to say. Minnesota came out as the, I'd say focused and more urgent team. And that's embarrassing because Denver was down 1-0. You figure down 1-0, Gobert's not playing. Okay. We got to bring it. We got to make sure that we go back to Minnesota tied 1-1. And the game was over within like 10 minutes. It just felt like Minnesota, after it was kind of back and forth for the first 5-6 minutes, Minnesota just flipped the switch and Denver never did. And Denver offensively is fundamentally broken right now. Joker, I'm going to call out. He's about to win his third MVP tomorrow. I think they announce it tomorrow. He's not aggressive enough offensively. And I know that you can make the argument that Naz Reid and Kat did a great job defensively against him yesterday. That is true. I know that Minnesota was doubling on some of the early catches, and then they ended up kind of transitioning their defensive coverage as the game went on. There's no world where Jamal Murray should be taking five more shots than Joker in a must-win playoff game. That just shouldn't happen. Joker attempting 13 shots should not happen in any of these games. He needs to attempt at least 20 shots a game. The problem that you have for Denver is that you can look at the supporting cast, and Minnesota has a lot of options. Ant's been great. Kat's been solid. And even Naz Reid was 5 of 14 last night, but at least he gives you something off the bench. Alexander Walker, too, gives you something off the bench. But at least they have two solid options right now offensively because Kat's been good. For Denver, Jamal Murray, injured or not, has been terrible in the series. He had 13 rebounds yesterday, but he had 8 points on 3 of 18 shooting. And I thought Porter Jr. was terrible. He was 4 of 12, 1 of 7 from 3. I don't know what he was trying to do for the game. He was just running around out there, just making stuff up on the fly. And he looked abysmal too. Aaron Gordon kept them afloat for the first quarter or so because he had a couple of threes. He had 20 points, mostly in the first half. But they just can't make shots. It's as simple as that. Minnesota's been hounding them defensively. Denver can't score. Murray looks injured. Joker's not aggressive enough to actually take over a game by himself for whatever reason. And Minnesota kicked their asses. So that's all I have to say. I just think Joker's obviously got to play better. Murray has to play better. And they don't have any actual depth, which we talked about for months. So if your star players for Denver are not going to give you great performances, you don't really have that wild card off the bench that can give you 20. You don't have that option. So you put a lot of added pressure on the starting five in particular to just have a phenomenal game. And when they don't, you're going to get your ass kicked. Yeah. And so far in the first two games, they have kind of gotten their asses kicked because the starting five has not been that good. So that's how I'm going to look at it. Minnesota defensively deserves all the credit. They were phenomenal without Gobert. Congrats to him on having a kid. But Denver, in order to talk about what adjustments they have to make, I don't know what they're supposed to do because you kind of just have to rely on your best players to play better and trying to get any contributions, whatever you possibly can, from the supporting cast. And it's a lot worse than Minnesota supporting cast. So it really just falls on Murray and Joker's shoulders, and I'm not sure they can do enough against this Minnesota team. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't, but it just comes down to Murray and Joker not doing enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, last night was that prime example, right? Like you mentioned, Murray, 3 of 18. I know he's dealing with a calf injury, but I mean, at this point of the season, everybody's dealing with something. And he came out and said that himself. But I think 100%
agree. Temper tantrum didn't help, but yeah.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Jokic has to be a lot more aggressive than he has been, or at least from game two. I know we had, 32 points in game one. Just wasn't good enough, but
it was on 25 shots, though. Like, 13 shots. Come on, man.
Yeah. But again, I think that you just got to give a lot of credit to Minnesota and how they played defensively and offensively. And they've just punched the Denver Nuggets in the mouth here. And now they've definitely have home court advantage. And now, like I mentioned, the Denver Nuggets have to win four of the next, five games if they want to win this series. So, I don't want to say pencil in Minnesota to win this series, but it's going to be very, very difficult. And Mike Malone has to quickly make some adjustments and see if they can, try to even this series back up when they go to Minnesota for games 3 and 4. So
who the backup point guard is anymore, because we're talking about Murray being injured. Reggie Jackson got injured yesterday. I'm not saying Reggie Jackson's a good player, but they don't have any guard depth. Like, who's their backup point guard? Is it Christian Brown? Like, what are you supposed to do now?
Justin Holiday, he's a small forward that they have listed. So, yeah, I mean, again, we talked about the beginning of the season that they lost a lot of their depth when they did win the title last year. Now, if your guys are getting injured, then you're really reaching at the end of the bench for someone to fill in for some of these guys that are getting injured. So, we'll see what transpires. But Minnesota has all the momentum right now, and they're really feeling themselves after the first two games here. But they have one in Denver heading back home for games 3 and 4. All right, Scott, let's get into the two games that are tipping off tonight. Game one in each of the conference finals here. But before we do that, let me tell everyone of our friends over at AG1. Start your morning here. Hey, you're waking up in the morning and maybe you're feeling a little bit down. Maybe you're not as focused, maybe feeling a little sick. Your immune system is feeling unsupported. I feel like that this morning. I'm a little bit under the weather. I had to pull out one of those AG1s to kind of get me through this podcast here, this episode here. Because when I do take that AG1, it helps me with feeling a little bit more relaxed. It also gives me the energy that I need. And I also really feel a real difference in my daily health as well. And I could focus more. And that's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. And not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop has vitamin C and zinc to support my immune health. I also recommended AG1 to all my family and friends because, again, AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists. It also is tested for 950 contaminants and NSF certified for sport. And even got my dad started drinking AG1 daily. And he always tells me how much more energy that he has, that it supports his gut health, and that his feeling a lot more manageable as well. So if you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/SGPN to get started. Again, that's drinkag1.com/SGPN. Check it out.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, Scott, let's get into it here for tonight. We'll start with the Eastern Conference, going chronological order. The Cleveland Cavaliers coming off of their Game 7 victory against Orlando Magic now face the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, the Boston Celtics. We'll start here with the series preview and our series bets, and then we'll get into Game 1 here for tonight. So as it stands right now, the Boston Celtics are a minus 1,800 favorite to win the series. Cleveland 10-1 to win the series. Series spread right now, if you want to look at that. Boston minus 1.5 is minus 550. Boston minus 2.5 is minus 240. Total games in this series is set at 5.5. And the over is at plus 210. So seems like the books are not giving much of a chance here to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They did, again, the Boston Celtics made easy work of the Miami Heat. Again, we're without Jimmy Butler. But, you know, we said that there's always going to be that one game in a series when you're going up against the Boston Celtics that they're going to have a really bad shooting night and their team is going to have a great shooting night. And that happened for Miami in game two. But after that, they just absolutely took care of business against that Miami Heat team. But now, going up against the Cleveland Cavaliers here, Scott, what are your thoughts on this series?
I think Boston's going to kill them. But the question is, do I think Cleveland can win a game? It's basically the same thing as the Miami series. You have to, the only potential play that you can have is either Boston to sweep or Cleveland will plus the games because there's no value in anything else for Boston. Yeah. So you have to try to figure out an angle on how to find value here. The Celtics lost one game to Miami because Miami shot the lights out from three. It was the best three-point shooting game in playoff franchise history for Miami. The other four games were not close. Now, Cleveland is a lot better than that Miami team because Miami was very injured, of course, with Butler being out and with Rozier being out. Cleveland did a nice job beating the Magic in seven. They didn't exactly look good for a decent portion of that series, but they found a way to win it when they were up 2-0 and they won every home game. Boston is so much better than them, but the question is, does Mazzulla have one game where the Celtics just no-show it intensity-wise and Cleveland steals it? Because if Boston is fully focused for all these games individually, they're going to sweep. they're just better than this team in every area. So the only way Cleveland can actually win a game is either if A, they get hot from three, or B, Mitchell carries them with 40 plus points and they find a way to steal one. But Boston should sweep them. Are they going to? I don't know. I really don't know. Because Mazzulla, my thoughts on him are well documented at this point. I don't think he's a good coach, and I think that he leaves his team vulnerable to mental lapses for, I'd say, entire quarters. And we saw that against Cleveland in, I think it was the last regular season meeting, when Dean Wade scored like 20 points in the fourth quarter and Boston blew a massive lead in the final couple minutes. If I had to pick my favorite play in this series, I'll probably ignore game four. A sweep is plus 135, but give me Boston to lead 3-0 in the series. So Boston to win the first three games at minus 115. Give me Boston to win both home games. Cleveland went 0-for in the three road games against Orlando. I think Boston will be up 2-0. And then I think they'll be able to take game three. There's not many options to actually find value with for the sake of the series prices, because Boston is that big of a favorite. Give me Boston to lead 3-0. Maybe they punt game four, and who knows. But yeah, just give me Boston to lead 3-0 at minus 115.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't have much for this series, because like you mentioned, it
there's no options.
There's not much that you like. It's you're laying a lot of minus heavy juice prices for anything that you do like for the Boston Celtics. And like you mentioned, right, even the sweep is what, plus 135 for the Boston Celtics. So I know some of the guys mentioning that 4-1 in the chat. You know, like I mentioned, there's going to be that one game that Cleveland, you know, probably game four at home, or maybe even game three. We'll see. That they'll able to get, maybe get one of those games, but I would not be surprised if the Boston Celtics do sweep this series, because they're just that much better, even without Porzingis for this series and right now for the foreseeable future. I still think they have way too much depth when we talk about Derek White, Peyton Pritchard even coming off the bench, Sam Hauser to knock down three-point shots for you, obviously with Jason Tatum, with Jaylen Brown. I just think that there's just too much firepower for this Boston Celtics team. And like Scott, you mentioned that it's going to have to be Donovan Mitchell again doing what he did in round one of the series, because I don't trust Darius Garland. We're not so sure if Jared Allen is going to play in the series dealing with a rib injury as well. But if he was playing, I think that's a huge significant advantage for the Cleveland Cavaliers down low in the paint, you know, grabbing rebounds and giving them rim protection. But the one thing that does make me nervous about Boston is that they're very reliant on the three-point shot. They can knock it down consistently, but at some point it may come to bite them. I don't think it'll be in this series. Maybe it's in the next series, or maybe if it is in the NBA Finals, we'll see if they get to the NBA Finals, because right now the road is pretty easy for them to get there. But yeah, it's Boston. I'd probably just play the sweep. Or it's Boston in five games. I really don't see this getting to six games, let alone five games here. So,
if anyone was wondering, by the way, Boston a sweeps around plus 145. Boston in five is plus 205. So, Kevin, I know you said that you're betting the 4-1 score. I don't mind it at plus 205. I'm just going to stick with the 3-0. The issue is Boston has been average at best at home in the playoffs for the last couple of years. So they might potentially punt a home game, but looking at the talent disparity between these teams, was anybody really like impressed by Cleveland? I know they showed a lot of mental toughness being down 18 at home in a game seven. I think that was the largest game seven comeback in NBA history. You're also down 18 to an Orlando team that can't score. I feel that's probably not a great sign when you're facing off against Boston in the following series. I'm not sure Cleveland is that good. Orlando is just a young team that I picked to win in seven. It looked really good for a half. But at the end of the day, Orlando couldn't score. Franz couldn't shoot. I think he was 1 of 12 to start that game. Suggs was also terrible from the floor. Orlando just couldn't score at the end of the day. And I think that Boston defensively can bring it. Offensively, they can definitely bring it. And I just don't think Cleveland's talented enough to match it. So I know Boston, based on reputation and based on just the history of the last couple of years, might blow a game, because we've seen them kind of no-show some home games and underperform in small, I'd say, spots. But as a whole, they really should just kill this team. Like, I just think that Cleveland, from what I saw in those seven games, they were terrible on the road, and Mitchell had to carry them with 89 points in the last two games of the series. if Mitchell has an off game, Cleveland basically automatically is going to lose. Like, I just don't think they have any other options because Garland was not good until the fourth quarter of game seven. And I don't think the supporting cast is that good. So, yeah, I think Boston sweep is worth considering, but I'm going to leave room for Mazzulla to be an idiot for one game. Give me Boston to lead 3-0 and -115.
Yeah, it's I think it should be easy pickings here for the Boston Celtics if they are focused here. So we'll leave it at that for this series. Do we fully expect Boston to advance here? I mean, not really much to talk about. So let's get into game one here for tonight, Scott. We do have game one here tipping off between these two teams. So it'll be I believe it's a 7:30 Eastern start, if I'm not mistaken. It's going to be a 7:05 Eastern start. Right now, the Boston Celtics are a 12-point favorite in this game with a total of 211. Looking at the injury report, like I mentioned, no Porzingis for the Boston Celtics. I believe I did see Jared Allen pop up questionable. Let me double check that here because the injury report's not loading for me right now, but I'll get to that here in a second. Cleveland obviously coming off of the 7-game series, usually a really bad spot for those teams here, but Boston laying 12 points here. Scott, what are your thoughts on that?
I think Boston's going to kill them. The question is, does Cleveland backdoor this thing? Typically speaking, I fade teams off of game seven, especially when you're looking at the other team who coasted in the previous round. It's a matter of resetting for Cleveland because they were intentionally punting the last game of the season just to face Orlando. And they almost blew a 2-0 lead. I don't know if they should have lost game five, but they almost did lose game five. Then they ended up almost losing game seven at home, and they came back and they won it. Now you just have a massive step up, like a wake-up call in terms of competition. You beat an Orlando team barely. That was just not a good offensive team for most of the season. And now you're facing off against Boston. There's going to be an adjustment period, not to mention some fatigue trying to adjust there. Boston's been scouting Cleveland for the last week because they beat Miami by basically 20 in every game they won, 30 in the finale of that series. But Boston, I think I just like in this spot. I know they're not great at home in the playoffs. I understand that Cleveland can maybe find a way to keep the game competitive in the fourth quarter if Boston takes their foot off the gas. I think Boston at some point in this game will be up 20 points. At some point, I just think Boston's going to be up by a lot. And then the argument is, do they completely blow the thing late? Maybe they do. But if I'm picking a team to lead by 20 at some point, then I'm picking them to probably cover 12. I'll lean to Boston. I think they'll be able to look sharp defensively. I'm not sure Jared Allen's going to play. But the issue I have with Cleveland, besides Mitchell, I don't trust anybody else on the court to score. And even Niang got benched for Marcus Morris for parts of it. So that got weird. You got a Marcus Morris sighting in the playoffs in the first round. But yeah, maybe you can agree or disagree with me. Do you trust anybody else on Cleveland? I know Strus had a decent showing there in the second half, hit a couple threes after being a non-factor in the first half. Cleveland just has a lot of inconsistent role players, and I don't trust any of them in the spot. So give me Boston in game one to kind of throttle this team. I think Boston wins by 20.
Yeah, I think Boston smacks him down here tonight.
It's a bad spot, you know.
It really is.
Boston's been sitting for a week. Cleveland had a game seven on Sunday, an emotional high. Now you're traveling on the road. You had one day of prep to face off against Boston. Yeah. It's really a bad spot if you're looking at the rest disadvantage and you're looking at just the overall, I'd say, the physicality of the first round series. Cleveland might be exhausted. I feel like that's not being talked about enough.
Yeah, I think maybe come second half, even if I think Cleveland keeps it relatively close within the first half, I just think that Boston coming out in the second half will put their foot down, especially with the fatigue factor that will be there for, like you just mentioned, for this Cleveland team coming off of the game seven on Sunday. You have, what, one day off in between. You have to prep, travel into Boston. So, again, I just think this is a really bad spot here for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I'll lay the wood here with the Boston Celtics minus a 12. Jared Allen is still officially listed as questionable for this game with the rib injury. So we'll keep an eye on that as the day progresses here to see if he plays tonight or not. I think it's really a telling sign that he didn't play in game seven for the Cavs, especially in a win or go home situation in that game. Total's at 211 in this game here, Scott. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it's the same thing as the Miami series. Like, I think Boston can score 110 and change. The question is, do I think Cleveland can actually score? I think I'm going to lean under in this game. I just think Cleveland's going to get clamped. I just watched them play on the road three times against Orlando, and they couldn't score. They just couldn't score at the end of the day. And I think Boston defensively can give this team a lot of problems. Mitchell, if he's going to score less than 30 points, Cleveland's not reaching 100. It's just not going to happen. If he scores less than 35 or 30, Cleveland, I don't think, has enough reliable scoring options with one day of rest after a game seven for me to expect them to have a great offensive game. I think Cleveland might score 90 in this game. I think they might just drag it down by themselves. So that might be a bit tricky because I'm picking Boston to win this game by 20. So give me some type of like 110-90 final, but I'm going to lean under. I still think Cleveland is a good defensive team. So I think that might result in a lower scoring matchup. Not really a strong opinion, but if I'm picking Boston to win, it's kind of correlated to the under because I just don't see Cleveland scoring. So I'll go with the under in this game.
Yeah, the three road games against Orlando in round one, the Cleveland Cavaliers had a net rating of minus 24.9. They had, of the first round teams, they had the second worst offensive rating, which trailed only the Orlando Magic. And they had, I believe, the fourth worst defense. Yeah, on the road. Not a great recipe there for them on the road, especially. Now you're going into a Boston team, against a Boston team on their home floor where they were absolutely dominant, pretty much all season long. So, keep that in mind. I think the only maybe over if you want to look at is maybe a Boston Celtics team total over. I think that they get their way offensively here in this game, led by both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Scott, player props in this game, anything you're looking at?
Well, I know we've been talking about opposing centers against Boston for the entire season. Horford's now going to be getting the main assignment, so we'll see what happens there. But people are going to be on Mobley. Mobley offensively was not great in that series, and he was not very good in Game 7 offensively. He had a couple of layups at the end to kind of ice the game, but he really was kind of a non-factor for a decent portion of that game. If you want to go with Mobley, I don't mind it. Maybe Mobley double-double if you think he gets the rebounds. Maybe that's an option. Are you a fan of Mitchell in this game, or do you hate Mitchell in this game? Because I got to assume Boston's going to either, one, try to do whatever they can to shut him down, or B, let Mitchell go crazy because everybody else on the team, they think they can stop. So Mitchell, I'm kind of passing on in this game.
I think I'm passing on him for this game here as well. I mean, excuse me. Offensively, he's had success against this Boston Celtics team. Just take the last four games against them, 44, 40, 29, 31. I think if it turns into a blowout, obviously, if they're up by 25 points with 6 minutes left, you're probably going to end up seeing Cleveland bench their starters and just put their bench players in and then just get ready for game two and not really waste a lot more energy for those guys, which could get them under the total. But the thing that makes me nervous is that the shot volume is, number one, going to be there for Donovan Mitchell. So I think I'm with you. I'm going to pass at least on game one for Donovan Mitchell props. The one that I am looking at, I did mention this on the last pod that we did, for game seven, was looking at Evan Mobley's blocks. It is a little bit juiced at minus 148. So if you're a same game parlay player, DraftKings has it right now at 1.5 for his blocks at minus 148. He had at least two blocks in the last five games against Orlando. In the series clinching game, he had five blocks, and also in game six he had five blocks as well. They still have it listed at 1.5. So if you want to add that to your same game parlay, if you just want to play that straight up, it is a little bit juice. Or if you want to even ladder it up, alt rebounds, maybe get up to 2.5. I couldn't talk you off of that. Three plus blocks for Evan Mobley is at plus 160. So if Jared Allen again doesn't play in this game, I do expect Evan Mobley to get bulk of the minutes here, because he did play 39 in game five, 34 in game six, and then 41 in game seven for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I didn't have any other player props because I do feel like Boston will blow him out here tonight. So don't want to look at a lot of overs in this game. You have anything else for this game?
Yeah, I thought about Tatum rebounds. Even if they do blow him out, Tatum rebounding-wise was solid in that Miami series. He had 10-plus rebounds in 4 of the 5 games. So if you do think that Boston's going to win and you think Cleveland offensively is going to struggle, then Tatum might be able to get some rebounds, especially with no Porzingis, who's not a good rebounder anyway. But no. The point is, Tatum might go out of his way to try to help secure more rebounds. He's also had at least 10 rebounds in 5 straight games against the Cavaliers. So if you do want to go for a Tatum prop, I don't mind the rebounds. The problem is you're not exactly sure how many minutes he's going to play if they blow it open. But if Tatum gets 32-plus minutes, give or take, I think he's got a good shot at getting to 10. And it's plus money. So give me the over 9.5 rebounds at plus 120.
Yeah, it's interesting that they have his double-double at minus 110, but the rebounds are at plus 120.
Yeah. I know he had a triple-double in game 1 of the last series. He's not getting 10 assists. So if you want double-double, just take the rebounds instead.
Yeah, 100%. All right, Scott, let's get over to the second game of the night and the second series that is tipping off here tonight in the Western Conference. That is going to be the Dallas Mavericks. They are going to be taking on the number one seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are the number one seed, or the Thunder, right? Yeah, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Right now, the books have this priced close to even, but the Thunder are a slight favorite at minus 120. Now, I did see that minus 115 the other night. Even money over on DraftKings if you think the Dallas Mavericks win this series. So Oklahoma City Thunder minus 120 to win the series. Dallas Mavericks are even money in this series against the OKC Thunder. Winner obviously goes to the Western Conference Finals here. These two teams matched up 4 times during the regular season. And I believe the Thunder won 3 out of the 4. Thunder won 3 out of the 4. But the last game that they played, where it was a 49-point victory for the Thunder, they didn't have Luka or Kyrie, did the Dallas Mavericks. But 2-2 against the spread, and the over was 3-1 between these two teams here. But now they face off in the conference semifinals here. Scott, what are your thoughts on the Thunder and the Mavericks?
Interesting line movement in the series. Initially, Dallas was actually favored, and then they ended up moving it to OKC, being about minus 120. I think Dallas opened up at minus 120, which might have been just an immediate reaction to, damn, Luka and Kyrie look really good against this Clippers team. It's really tough to evaluate what happened in the first round because I don't think New Orleans is any good, especially with Zion being out and the Thunder smacked them as they should have, because I don't think that CJ and Ingram are a solid 1-2 punch at all, and Ingram especially was terrible. So yeah, the Thunder did what they had to do. They won in 4 games. As for the Mavericks, it was kind of weird because the Clippers looked pretty good early. Then Dallas figured them out, and then Dallas killed them in the last couple games of the series. So I don't really know what to make of the first round because OKC looked very sharp, but I really did not like that Pelicans team at all. And I do think that even though the Clippers were a bit overrated because Kawhi got injured and Harden fell apart in the final couple games of that series, Harden was still very good for the first couple games, and they did find a way to win game 1. They ended up winning that game where they blew a 30-point lead in the process and ended up still holding on to win at the end because Harden and Paul George are really good. It's a very tough series to call. I think this could go 7 potentially. Like, it has a deep series, I'd say, script to it, if I had to guess personally. I think I'm going to lean to Dallas if I had to pick between the two of them. I just think that Luka and Kyrie are going to be too much. Now, the counterpoint is that OKC has a lot of depth, and they do have the ability to kind of wear you down with numbers, because if Luka or Kyrie are off, Dallas has a hard time, and OKC can, in theory, get production from a lot of different sources, and maybe Dallas can't get away with that. I am going to lean to Dallas personally. I just think Dallas is going to find a way. I just trust Luka and Kyrie more in crunch time. Maybe I'm harsh on SGA. I get if you like SGA. I'm going to lean Dallas, though. They've been here before. OKC hasn't. Maybe nerves play a factor here. But I am going to lean to Dallas. I just think that they have enough front court depth with Lively and with Gafford to really just constantly have lob threats to give OKC's defense a problem. And I know that Kleber's going to be out for the entire series, which kind of sucks because he gave him some shooting, and he was actually solid in the last couple games of the series. But I see a very competitive series. I see it being very close. But at the same point, I think Dallas finds a way. I'm going to lean to Dallas in 6 or 7.
Yeah, I like Dallas in this series here as well. For a lot of things that you did mention, we know Luka's going to get his. But I think the one guy that I think that the OKC Thunder are really going to have a problem with is Kyrie. He's been absolutely phenomenal in that first round against the Clippers. And I think that's going to continue here as far as the Dallas Mavericks do get. It just makes me nervous that, or not really nervous, but I think the question for me is for the Thunder is, yeah, you have SGA that can go out and put up 30 points a night for you, but who's going to be that second consistent guy that's going to show up? I know Jalen Williams has been absolutely phenomenal. I don't really trust Chet. We already saw the news and notes that, you know, he was absolutely tired after the season was over, now playing postseason basketball here. Luckily for them, it was only 4 games in the first round. But like you mentioned, Scott, that this could be a series where it could go. I'm with you that it could go 6 or 7 games here. But I think that the advantage that every team has against the Thunder that the Pelicans weren't really able to expose, and maybe what I've been different with Zion out there, is inside the paint, because they don't have true rim protection. And if Daniel Gafford can stay out of foul trouble, if Derek Lively can stay out of foul trouble as well, those lobs and those assists are going to be there all day for Luka and even Kyrie to get it to those big men. They should have a huge advantage on the boards as well. Whether it is with those two centers, whether it is with Luka rebounding the basketball as well. I know they're going to be missing Maxi Kleber in this game, who does stretch the floor out. Maybe not a consistent three-point shooter, but they do get Tim Hardaway Jr. back in the series as well, which I think is really important for this Dallas Mavericks team, giving another shooter out there next to Luka.
Is it bad that I completely forgot that Hardaway Jr. was injured? Like, that's what I think of Tim Hardaway Jr. I just completely just didn't even notice he wasn't on the court.
He's going to have one game in there where he's going to look really, really good shooting the basketball, whether it's knocking down 5, 6 3-point shots.
It definitely helps because it gives them an extra floor spacer. And yeah. I know his 3-point numbers are usually solid, but that kind of tells you my thoughts on Hardaway Jr. At no point during the series was I like, oh yeah, Hardaway Jr. is not playing. It just never even crossed my mind at any point in these games. But yeah, you're not wrong.
So I do like the depth for Dallas, the guys coming off the bench. I really want to see Josh Green getting a lot more minutes because I think defensively he's really good for this Dallas Mavericks team. So I'll go Dallas in this series right there with you against 6. I think this is gets a 7. I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch between these two teams. So yeah, Dallas for me to get to the Western Conference Finals here. Any serious props you're looking at? Anything that excites you in that market?
So the thing is, I'm not sure if I'm better off taking Dallas minus games or if I'm better off just taking them to win the series because the price is so cheap anyway. They're basically even money to win the series. So I don't even have to get too creative when it comes to trying to figure out which angle I want to take. I think if I was going to maybe get a little bit creative, I don't mind Dallas minus 1.5 games. Dallas minus 1.5 games, for reference here, is about plus 172. I mean, I think that's a pretty good deal. Dallas and 6, I think, might be worth consideration. Dallas and 6 is plus 600. Hell yeah, that's a great deal.
Yeah.
6 to 1. Like, I think that's a great long shot price because if Dallas is going to win, I think most people don't typically expect the road team to win game 7. So if you are picking Dallas to win, you're probably expecting OKC to take a couple of games, but Dallas steals home court and they close it out in game 6. 6 to 1, I think, is a hell of a price because if the dog's going to win the series, you do want to stick with the idea of them closing the series out on their home floor. 6 to 1, though, I think is a great price. So if I had to go for a long shot, Dallas 6 at 6 to 1, I think, is a very good price.
All right. Yeah, I was looking at to average over 9.2 rebounds in this series. Take a look at the last 4 head-to-head matchups against the Thunder. 16 rebounds, 11 rebounds, 15 rebounds, 8 rebounds. He's also been doing a whole heck of a lot of scoring as well. A lot of those games, Kyrie wasn't there. But I think that he could have a lot of success basketball for everything that we did talk about. Again, if those two guys are in foul trouble, in Daniel and Derek Lively, I think that Luka will be more than likely to grab those rebounds as he has against the Thunder. So he's right now around DraftKings, should get over 9.2 rebounds per game in this round 2 matchup against the Mavericks there, right around minus 115 if you want to take a look at that. Other than that, I think that, again, if you like everything that Scott mentioned, that if you do like Dallas in the series, you know, you either just play it straight up on the series winner, or you can, you know, put something down on the series spread there, or exact outcome. I want to see what the total games is at. Is that over 5.5? Is that minus 180? I know that's something that we really don't give out a lot here on the pod, but minus 180, it is, I mean, a bit steep there on the juice, but I fully expect this game to at least get to six between these two teams. Anything else for the series here, Scott, before we get into game one?
Yes. Even though I was leading Dallas to win the series anyway, I am rooting for Dallas to win the series solely because of the What a Pro Wants commercial. I just want that on record. Just to get, I tweeted that out, but I'll say it here. We got to stop airing that commercial. I think that commercial might single-handedly make Shea unlikable. Like, we have to stop airing that commercial. It's too much. It's even worse than the Whopper Whopper commercial that was on for like 3 months straight. It's up there. It's an all-time bad commercial. It's driving me nuts.
Scott absolutely mutes the TV every time he sees SGA show up on the TV.
I just changed the channel. I just switched to the hockey game every time that commercial comes on.
All right, Scott, game one between these two teams tonight in the second game of the doubleheader. Right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder are a 3.5-point home favorite. Total of 218 in this game. Injury report, like I mentioned, no Maxi Kleba for the Dallas Mavericks and for the OKC Thunder. Pretty clean injury report, nothing of significance on there for them. Slight rest advantage or mid to significant rest advantage for the Oklahoma City Thunder after sweeping the Pelicans. But right now, 3.5 is a number for this Thunder team. What are you thinking about for game one here?
I think it's like the under in this game. I'm going to keep it simple. For the spread, it might be tricky. I guess the argument is you want the home team in game one, especially just based on the environment. But OKC in that Pelicans series was not good in game one. You might remember that being the game they probably should have lost. Then they dominated the game after that. But I'm going to ask you once again, did you really take away much from that Pelicans series? The argument is they were a young team and they were not intimidated by the moment. Maybe they were in game one, but they overcame it and they still managed to find a way to win it. That was the main takeaway, was that OKC as a young team did what they needed to do. Was New Orleans a good basketball team? No. I think we'd agree with Zion being out. They were not a very good basketball team. So I don't know if I can really take much away from that besides the mental toughness angle, which you could argue might be a little bit of a flimsy argument because two of the games are very close. But I think for this one, I'm just going to lean to the under. I know the regular season meetings were high scoring, but the playoffs are a different atmosphere. Dallas defensively has been really good, especially for the last couple games. And I do think that you might end up getting a feeling out process potentially from these teams. But Dallas in game one against the Clippers was an absolute rock fight. That was a game where neither team reached 100 points, I believe. Or maybe the Clippers did. I don't remember. But Dallas got buried in that game. They ended up, they lost 109-97. And 109, honestly, feels a bit high, just based on how that game went. But the point is, Dallas offensively no-showed game one, and it was kind of slow. It was physical. OKC game one against New Orleans, slow, physical, rock fight. I don't mind the under in this game. I think 218 is too high. That was my main takeaway for the series for the first round for both teams. They were really good defensively. Just simply put, they were just really good defensively. Dallas figured out the Clippers, and they looked sharp defensively for the last couple games in the series. OKC defensively was really, really good. I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. And I think that Dallas, we know with Luka, who may or may not be injured, likes to play in the half court because Luka and Kyrie can get whatever shot they want in the half court. I'm going to lean to the under in this one. So I see a lower scoring game.
Yeah, Dallas has just not been very good in game ones since the 2020 playoffs. They in six game ones since 2020, 1-5 straight up, 1-5 against the spread. The totals in those games are also 5-1 to the over. 5-1 to the under in those games there. So I'll lean with OKC Thunder here for game one. I feel like Dallas, I feel like Thunder will be the more prepared team here tonight. And again, historically, like this Dallas Mavericks team doesn't come out and play well in game ones. Like you mentioned, the feel out process, and then they make their adjustments from there. So again, if we like Dallas in the series, then you probably want to take, I think there's probably some good value on Dallas, OKC game one, and then Dallas game, so Dallas for the series. Let me see if I can find that exact outcome. So OKC game, where'd it go? That's,
I saw 420, but I'll shop around and see if I can find a better number. No, I basically see 420 being the best price.
Yeah. Yeah, I see it down to plus 340 now on DraftKings. So, but nonetheless,
420.
Okay. But nonetheless, I think that OKC Thunder come out here tonight and they play really good basketball. I'm just going to fade this Dallas Mavericks team's in game one here. And I think at that point, then we'll see the adjustments made by Jason Kidd and the Dallas Mavericks in game two. All right.
I should take it back. I saw 340. Apologies. I made up 420. Okay.
All right. Any player props in this game looking at?
Somebody's going to have to rebound the ball for these teams. Yeah. Luka would be my guess if I had to pick somebody to rebound. I don't mind Luka triple-double in this game potentially, but I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. My question for you is, who gets the Kyrie assignment and who gets the Luka assignment? Do you put Dort on Luka? Do you put Dort on Kyrie? What do you do?
So I think Mark Dagnall came out and said, what's the... In so many words, somebody asked him, what's the defensive assignment for Luka in this series? And he said, hopefully Lou Dort shows up on time for the games.
Okay. I'm assuming Dort unders. Isn't Dort going to spend all his energy defensively trying to stop these guys? And he might be in foul trouble for throughout a decent portion of this game. I'm trying to think of a script where Dort has a great defensive and offensive impact. And I'm not sure he's going to do that. He was able to stop Brandon Ingram. But Luka, we know, is great at drawing contact. Yes, there's a lot of flopping involved in ref manipulation. But isn't Dort in line to just give everything he has defensively and to have like nothing left over offensively? Isn't that kind of what we're looking at for a Dort script?
Yeah. So, I mean, what's his points prop for tonight? Let's see. I don't even see him. Oh, there he is. 10.5 is his points prop.
I know it sounds short, but I don't know if it's actually short or not, because I'm picking a lower scoring game and he has to spend all his time guarding Luka or Kyrie. So I think he's going to be exhausted or in foul trouble or both for a decent portion of this game. So
yeah,
I don't mind Dort unders. Might be a bit of a hot take, but we know Dort doesn't exactly generate his own offense. He's kind of more of a 3-point kickout guy, and his 3-point shooting can be streaky at times. But Dort under is what I'm thinking of. I like Luka rebounds, though. We talked about it before. Somebody's going to have to rebound the ball for this team, and I think Luka's in line for that. So I don't mind Luka rebounds. His assists are 10.5. That's a bit too high for me to take. But his rebounds are... Let me currently just try to find the best price. Luka's rebounds are at 9.5. The over's at minus 110. He's done well head-to-head-wise, rebounding against OKC the last couple games against the Thunder. Luka does have at least 11 rebounds in 3 of the last 4 games against OKC. So give me Luka rebounds. I think he's in line for at least 10 rebounds in this game.
Yeah, and that's why I did like him for the average over 9.2 rebounds for the series. So yeah, I'm right there with you on that. Dort, just for reference, this season against the Dallas Mavericks, 10 points, 5 points, 12 points, and 5 points. So he's just gone over this number just in one game against the Dallas Mavericks. And that 12-point game, he got up 9 total shot attempts, made 4, 3 of the 6, he was 3 of 6 from 3-point land. So majority of his shots are going to come beyond the arc. So I think that's a good look. Maybe that we want to take a look at his under here tonight, or even for the series going forward before the books do adjust there. So Luka rebounds, if you want to look at Luka points and rebounds, rebounds and assists to go over. I don't hate that, but I do expect him to have a big night rebound in the basketball throughout this series here. Points, rebounds and assists are at 19.5, or at that point, maybe you want to take a look at the triple-double as well for Luka. It's at plus 185 for him in this game. So Kyrie points would be something I would be intrigued by as well. That number's at 24.5. That number seems a little short to me. If that defensive focus or is going to be on Luka, then that's just going to open up the opportunities for Kyrie in this series. And again, Kyrie, this season against the Thunder had 25 points and a 36-point game against them earlier this season. So, I'll look at Kyrie in this game here as well. Anything else for game one here, Scott, before we do get into our picks in our Underdog Fantasy Entry?
It's not for game one, but I ended up creating some type of long shot parlay with a player parlay for the series with this and a hockey one. Yeah, Luka 10 assists every game is 26-1. Is it going to get there? Probably not. 26-1? I threw it together with something. I think it was like $15 to win $50,000. I just threw together some nonsense after I cashed out and made $1,000 over the weekend. So I spent some of the winnings and just made some stuff up. But yeah, 26-1, maybe. Is it going to get there? Probably not. Just full disclosure. But I'm trying to think if there's any other value plays I like. Kyrie to score 20 in every game is plus 130. Not interested. Kyrie 25 plus in every game is 14-1. These player prop parlays are tricky because you want a short series. You want a series that's going to end quickly because when you get it in every game, that's four or five games. It's going to be hard to get there in the series. Yeah. So I didn't have anything for that market unless you want to go for potentially a 40-piece by Luka. 45-piece by Luka is plus 195. That's not really a value play. Shea to score 45 in any game is 6-1. I don't think he's going to get there either. I didn't see much. Chet, 8 rebounds in every game is plus 550. Chet, 15 rebounds in any game is plus 270. I really just didn't see much for any player prop parlays for this series. I just didn't see much. So,
All right, let's get into our lock and dog here for the games here tonight. You want to lead us off?
Sure. So for my lock on the show, I'm trying to think of what I want to go with here because I know what my dog is going to be, but it's also a cheap price, so I don't even know if I can get away with doing it. For my lock on the show, you know what? I'll actually just back what I think is going to happen in this game. I'll go with the under in the Thunder and the Mavericks game. I just see a spot where actually, or do I want the Luka rebounds instead? Yeah, you know what? Screw it. Give me the Luka rebounds. I talked myself out of it. It's at 9.5. I just think that line's too low. Somebody's going to have to rebound for Dallas. I see a lower scoring game. He's had at least 11 rebounds in three of the last four games against OKC. And overall, Luka recently for rebounding to go through his last couple of games. Looking at his last couple games, he wasn't exactly that great in the Clippers series. Clippers do have size, though. They were using Zubac and Plumlee and company. OKC doesn't have much. So I see Luka rebounding pretty well in the series. Give me Luka over 9.5 rebounds as my lock. For my dog, will you let me get away with Tatum 9.5 rebounds at plus 120, or is that too small of a price?
I'll allow it.
Cool. I'll take Tatum over 9.5 rebounds. So give me a superstar rebounding lock and dog.
And then at that point, you want to just parlay those two together as well. Get some more even plus odds there. But yeah, I do like it. Again, I think that without Porzingis, it's not much of a rebounder, but I think that for Tatum, he's, I don't want to say his focus has been on rebounding, but he is a pretty good rebounder for, you know, for the player that he is. So, and again, we know Luka will get the rebounds against this OKC Thunder team. So I do not hate it. All right, for my lock, I will go, I think I just want to go Boston here tonight and just lay the wood, man. It's a very, very tough situation for the Cleveland Cavaliers coming off of game 7. So, I think that the Boston Celtics will be ready to play here tonight. They've been really good at home. We talked about how bad the offense and the defense was for Cleveland in the three road games against Orlando. And now you're going up against the best offensive efficient team during the regular season in their building in the Boston Celtics. I think the Boston Celtics roll here tonight into a 15 plus point victory at minimum. Won't be surprised if they do win by 20 plus here tonight. And I think those tired legs will really catch up to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second half coming off that game 7, just having one day off in between those games. So Boston Celtics minus the 12 here for me. For my dog, it's going to be probably like a...
Do you want like OKC halftime, full-time or something?
No, I was thinking like a player prop parlay here. Okay. Let me see if I can put it together because I really do like the 1.5 blocks for Evan Mobley. I don't know why the books haven't adjusted to that. And I'll also take Luka rebounds and assists to go over. I feel like the assists may not be there at that point. I just want to play the triple double. But I think that it's a big rebounding night for him as well. I agree with you 100% on that. So I'll take Luka rebounds and assists to go over 19.5 and Evan Mobley blocks over 1.5. That gets you around plus 204 here for tonight. So one player prop each from each of the games here for tonight between these two teams. All right, so that's our lock and dog. Let's get over to our underdog fantasy entry here for tonight. Again, underdogfantasy.com. Make sure you guys use that promo code NBASGPN and come get involved with us. Your first deposit bonus will be $100. If you already have an account, get your family members involved, any coworkers involved, anybody in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates and of legal age. So come get involved with us. All right, so I think we should start here with the Luka rebounds. Here's Scott. That is at 9.5 on Underdog Fantasy. We'll put that in there. Where else do you want to go?
I don't know if you want Tatum there. Probably not, because in case they do blow him out, I'm not sure if I actually want to double down on Tatum. Trying to think of what you might be tempted by. Mobley blocks, I'm probably going to pass on personally. I know his blocks are good, but Boston takes so many threes, I'm just not going to bother. I'm just worried about them actually just not attempting enough shots at the rim. You want to fade Garland or Mitchell, or should we potentially go elsewhere? I'm just spitballing ideas.
I think we can. I would not be opposed to fading Mitchell, but the only thing that worries me is that he's going to jack up 30 plus shots, even if he only plays like 30.
That's why I thought about Garland potentially fading, because Mitchell might just try to go hero ball.
What do you think about Derek White assist?
I don't mind it. Once again, you run yourself the risk of, if Boston does blow him out, how many minutes do these guys play?
Yeah. Let's see. Let's see how he's done against them. At last three games, 4, 5, and 6 assists. Okay. Sorry, no. 4, 3, and 7. Never mind on that then. You want to go like Kyrie points?
What's that number at?
24.5.
Sure.
Okay. We'll throw that in there. Where's Kyrie? All right. We'll throw in one more. Where's Kyrie? Yeah, 24.5. All right.
A part of me is gravitating to like an Al Horford prop, but I'm not sure which prop I want. Al Horford's at 9.5 points. Really? That feels pretty
good. What about Lou Dort lower points? Since we think
I think I'm going to actually make a case for Horford to go lower than 9.5 points. He's going lower in 7 of the last 8 games. I just don't think he shoots enough. So I'll go with the case for Horford. Even with Porzingis, by the way, being injured, he only played 22 minutes in the closeout game.
Yep.
I'm not sure how many minutes he's going to play in this game anyway. So, yeah, give me Horford lower 9.5.
All right, we'll go lower 9.5 for for Al Horford. All right, so our entry for tonight, higher 9.5 rebounds, Kyrie higher 24.5 points, and Al Horford lower 9.5 points. That $10 entry will get you a return of $60, courtesy of Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you guys use our promo code NBASGPN. Get yourselves involved with us on our Underdog Fantasy entries here for the NBA playoffs. All righty, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast. Scott, anything else you want to mention before we get out of here?
Yes, I want to thank the odds makers, before I forget, for giving us Wemby, Rookie of the Year, at plus money about a month or two into the season. I appreciate it. Thank you for the free payday. He was a unanimous Rookie of the Year winner. Thank you. I want to give my shout-outs to the odds makers.
Yeah, it was interesting at that point because they had came out and said the Spurs that he was going to not play what it was like the second night of a back-to-back. And then I think that's when like the odds shifted. And then I think the league probably said no, he needs to be out there because he's going to be the face of the NBA. So he started.
Chet was favored by like for like 5 days, and it's like, all right, yeah, thank you, I appreciate the plus 120.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place for the NBA Gambling Podcast. Get into the Wednesday schedule as well, and they'll recap what they saw on Tuesday night as well. Make sure you guys follow Scott on Twitter at Rightshell Radio. You can follow me there at SportsNerd824. More importantly, if you haven't already subscribed to the NBA Gambling Podcast YouTube channel, please go ahead and do so. And like I said, we'll be back tomorrow. All right, we'll talk to you guys then.
I do want to make one quick thing. I forgot to mention, by the way, if you do want more basketball content, a show is starting back up again tonight.
Oh, yes.
WNBA. Terrell and I are going to be back tonight to go through the win totals. So if you do want to catch up on the WNBA action, the season starting up, I think in a week or two, Terrell and I will be officially starting our preseason episodes for the WNBA. So stay tuned for that. Should be like 8 or 9 o'clock. But once again, if you do want some preseason win totals, you want our thoughts on the teams, Terrell and I will be back tonight to go through WNBA action.
There we go. Women's basketball returning in a week or two here. So look out for Terrell and Scott. Make sure you guys get over there, subscribe to the podcast there as well. And again, they'll get you guys ready for the WNBA season. All right, talk to you guys tomorrow. Till then, good luck with your bets. Let's break these books off and let it ride.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, basketball, give me the ball, because I'm gonna dunk it. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, basketball, give me the ball.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.